This past Friday afternoon in the Mexican city of Juarez, just south of the U.S. border, a man lay on the sidewalk shot. Paramedics were attending to him. Police had gathered nearby. And then this. A car bomb exploded, killing three people, including a federal police officer. Authorities now believe the injured man was a decoy to lure police to the scene. Tens of thousands of Mexicans have been killed in the country's drug wars since Mexican President Felipe Calderón announced a crackdown on drug cartels in 2006. But some observers say Friday's car bombing marked a new low, a sign we're now witnessing the Colombianization of Mexico. They warn that Mexico's drug wars are escalating to the level seen in Colombia during the late 80s and early 90s, when Pablo Escobar was fighting it out for control of the cocaine industry. But others see a different sort of comparison with Colombia, a more hopeful one. They say Colombia's experience could actually provide the Mexican government the blueprint to win its own war against the drug cartels. Robert Bonner was administrator of the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration from 1990 to 1993 and was the commissioner of U.S. Customs and Border Protection from 2001 to 2005. We reached him in Los Angeles. Good morning.
Good morning, Jim.
Thank you for joining us.
Happy to be with you.
Let me start by asking you to describe the situation in Mexico right now.
The situation certainly is not good, and by that I mean there's a very significant level of drug-related violence, mainly homicides, but there are also a significant increase in kidnappings and extortion, the kinds of things that go hand-in-hand with organized crime. Most of the homicides, though, are members of one drug cartel killing members of other drug cartels, but some of the violence clearly is intended to intimidate the government itself and the people. We're seeing kind of terrorist tactics, narco-terrorism that's very reminiscent of Colombia 20 years ago.
Well, I wanted to talk to you about the similarities that you see between Mexico's war with its cartels and Colombia's war with the Medellin and the Cali cartels back in the 90s. Draw some connections for us.
Well, as bad as the situation in Mexico is today, and I don't mean to underestimate it, Colombia back in the early 1990s was even worse. Yet Colombia, with a lot of assistance from the United States, by the way, eliminated what were the two most powerful and fearsome drug cartels the world had ever seen. That was the Medellin and then the Cali cartels that literally threatened the state itself. So there's hope for Mexico, especially if Mexico understands and applies the critical lessons from Colombia that go back 15, 20 years ago.
Well, let's talk a little bit about those lessons. What specific steps were taken in Colombia that you feel could apply to Mexico?
Well, I think it's important to have an understood and shared goal, and I mean not just in Mexico, because I think President Calderón and the political leadership in Mexico do understand that the most important objective here is to dismantle and destroy these major drug cartels in Mexico that are a threat to the state itself. That is to say, they, through corruption and intimidation, seek to be able to operate with impunity and beyond the rule of law. That has to be the goal. I think it's important that the United States understand that goal. Sometimes we get caught up on the goal should be to eliminate drug trafficking and so forth. Well, this might have some effect on that, but the real goal, and the U.S. needs to share this goal, is to destroy and dismantle these major drug cartels. The second thing is you need to use a proven strategy, and there was a strategy that was employed in Colombia. Essentially, it was the kingpin strategy, which was not just identifying, locating, and apprehending the kingpins and the top lieutenants, the potential successors when you remove a kingpin of these powerful drug organizations, but also understands how you weaken these organizations by attacking their vulnerabilities, their cash flow, and so on. And then you need to understand that, you know, you can't just do this using the military. I mean, the military does have a role here because you have heavily armed paramilitary enforcement groups for these drug cartels in Mexico, just as you had in Colombia.
Mm-hmm.
But you do need to develop evidence, use confidential informants, electronic surveillance, and that's principally a law enforcement job. The military actually isn't trained and isn't really terribly good about it. And then the last thing I would say is that and this is critical. I mean, in the longer term, Mexico needs to essentially reform its police, prosecutorial, judicial, and even penal institutions to make them more resistant to corruption, to professionalize them, so that ultimately you can, on a sustained basis, eliminate these very large and powerful drug organizations.
It sounds, though, like step three would have to be taken before steps one and two. I mean, the situation with police forces in Mexico right now and the rampant corruption and bribery there, it would make it difficult to have a police solution to a drug cartel problem.
Well, I think some steps have been taken to reform the federal police, but you're right. You have the state police. You have, this is a very daunting challenge for Mexico because it's a large problem, and it takes time to do these transformations, but it can be done. In fact, it has to be done.
Now, what kind of concrete action would you like to see from your government?
Well, I think the U.S. has a role here, and it had a very strong role in Colombia in assisting the Colombian government in its efforts, particularly in the 1990s, to defeat the Medellin and Cali cartels. Essentially, you know, we have made a commitment which started off being probably too focused on military equipment and military assistance to Mexico. I think the key role for the U.S., actually, when you get right down to it, on one level, is to assist the government of Mexico with the training, professionalization of its own law enforcement capabilities, and to a certain extent, the reforms of its judicial system so that it works in a way that's more transparent and less vulnerable to corruption and intimidation. So that's probably the main thing we can do. The other thing is, this is a multinational problem. I mean, it's not as these drug cartels, and there are about six or seven of them, are based in Mexico, but they operate in the United States in something like over 200 cities in the U.S. They have distribution arms.
Mm-hmm.
They operate in Guatemala and other Central American countries. Their tentacles extend into Bolivia and Peru, and frankly, they're the main suppliers of cocaine to Europe through West Africa. So these are multinational organizations, and the U.S. can do a lot to develop what is truly a multinational strategy to assist the Mexican government to bring down these organizations.
Are Mexico and Colombia really that similar? I mean, Colombia was a major producer of drugs. Mexico is primarily a trade route for cocaine from the Andes to make its way into the U.S. How much can you compare them?
Well, I think if you go back into the 15, 20 years ago, and you look at the Medellin and Cali cartels, those were fully integrated production, transportation, distribution organizations. I mean, they controlled all of it, and they were eliminated. And the parallels are very strong.
Now, I guess the other question is Colombia today really a success story? It's still the world's biggest producer of cocaine. The FARC still controls a lot of those drugs. A lot of people are still being killed.
Well, it's a success story if you're Colombian, because there are no major criminal organizations that threaten the legitimate institutions of the Colombian government, certainly in the way that the Medellin and the Cali cartel did. Now, it would be nice to end all drug trafficking. I mean, that's a much more complicated equation. But yeah, I would say Colombia has been hugely successful if the goal is and was to destroy and defeat these major criminal organizations, because they have been eliminated in Colombia, and nobody disputes that.
Robert Bonner, thanks once again for joining us. We appreciate it.
Not at all. Good to be with you, Jim.
That's Robert Bonner, administrator of the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration from 1990 until 1993. He was also the commissioner of U.S. Customs and Border Protection from 2001 to 2005, and we reached him in Los Angeles. Not everyone agrees that the United States and Mexico should be looking to Colombia as a model in the fight against Mexico's cartels. Adam Isaacson is the Senior Associate for Regional Security Policy at the Washington Office on Latin America. That's a liberal think tank in Washington, D.C., and he joins me from our studio there. Good morning.
Good morning, Jim.
Thanks for joining us. I know you just heard my interview with Robert Bonner. What do you make of the argument that he's putting forward?
Well, I mean, to some extent, I do agree with Mr. Bonner's assessment that Mexico looks a lot like Colombia in the late 1980s, early 1990s, where you've got these multinational cartels that are hyper-violent and do have the ability to really threaten institutions. But Mr. Bonner's narrative stops in 1994, 1995, when the Medellin and Cali cartels were taken down, which is a success, and we should learn from that. But when they were taken down, the flows of cocaine coming out of Colombia to the United States and elsewhere barely got a hiccup. I mean, there was maybe a blip, and then they remained steady or perhaps even increased afterward. Someone else simply moved in to satisfy the demand. And really, for the next 10 years after the cartels were taken down, that someone else was someone almost as bad as the Medellin and Cali cartels. It was the FARC guerrillas and the AUC right-wing paramilitary groups who killed tens of thousands of people during that period.
So obviously, getting rid of the heads of the cartels in Colombia did have an impact on the cartels themselves. Would that same kind of plan, targeting the heads, have that kind of influence in Mexico, do you think?
Yeah, I think a kingpin strategy with careful police, law enforcement, intelligence, and elite units and a judiciary that actually had the security and the tools that it needed in order to try and put these guys away absolutely could bring down the cartels as we know them today in Mexico. The question is, what would just come up to replace them given all the money that's being made in transshipment?
And what do you think the answer to that is?
I don't know. It's hard to tell because Mexico doesn't, unlike Colombia, thank goodness, does not have a rural insurgency of any strength that could immediately take this over. But organized crime, as we found elsewhere, is like the Hydra. You cut off one head and new heads grow immediately. Colombia, as you mentioned in your interview with Mr. Bonner, still is the number one source of cocaine for the world. Mm-hmm. And although Mexican cartels have now taken up much of the profit from that, there are still dozens of Colombian organized crime organizations, as well as guerrilla fronts and paramilitary organizations, still shipping cocaine every day. So, they're smaller, they don't kill as many people as they used to, but they're still out there and they could mutate into something else at any time.
I want to talk a little bit about the Clinton initiative, Plan Colombia.
Sure.
Before you give us your assessment of it, just background us a little bit on that. What is Plan Colombia?
Sure. After the Medellin and Cali cartels were taken down, the second half of the 1990s saw things get really, really bad in Colombia. The cartels had the ability to grow the stuff in Peru and Bolivia and then ship it out of Colombia. But these newer organizations didn't have that capacity. So all of a sudden, coca began to be grown all over Colombia in enormous amounts. And the money from that went largely to the guerrillas and the paramilitaries, and violence was just off the charts. The Clinton administration got worried about that and decided to start aiding Colombia's military as never before, setting up counter-narcotics units in the military, giving them dozens and dozens of helicopters, and greatly expanding a program of spraying just hundreds of thousands of hectares a year of Colombia with herbicides from planes. Since Plan Colombia was approved almost exactly 10 years ago, 10 years ago this month, mm-hmm. the United States has spent more than $7 billion on aid to Colombia, about three-quarters of it military and police aid.
And how would you assess the impact of that? What's the situation like in Colombia today?
The impact on drugs has really not been significant. Only in the last year or two, after they changed strategy and started to de-emphasize this fumigation, have they actually seen some gains on coca supplies, although those have been completely undone by increases in coca supplies from Peru and Bolivia. On violence, I mean, Colombia, at the same time as we began giving money for Plan Colombia, Colombia actually tripled its defense budget and nearly doubled the size of its police and military. So they deployed the military all over the country as never before and have weakened the guerrillas somewhat, although the FARC still does have about 8,000 members and the remnants of the paramilitary groups still have about an equal amount. And actually, in the last couple of years, violence measures tumbled throughout the 2000s, although that really has lost momentum and is starting to go up again. So the picture's mixed. I mean, on security, mm-hmm. I think they made some gains, which are fragile and maybe starting to reverse, unfortunately. On drugs, they barely made any dent at all.
So should we be considering some sort of Plan Mexico?
Right now, I think what Mexico needs is not a military strategy. An army is designed to go out in combat and defeat an enemy with overwhelming force. That's not what Mexico needs because this is happening alongside the citizens. I think I actually agree with some of what Mr. Bonner said before, that you really have to start with a police force that is has the capability to do investigations and knows the rules of evidence, can build cases sometimes over the course of a couple of years and put away the kingpins. That has to go hand in hand with a justice system that can actually punish wrongdoing, which Mexico simply doesn't have right now.
Mm-hmm.
And by wrongdoing, I mean human rights abuse, which the complaints of human rights abuses have gone up about tenfold since 2006, since President Calderon sent the army into the streets. That's important, but you also need a justice system because one of the main goals of these cartels is to infiltrate the state, the government, at every level, corrupting people and winning them over to their side. And those people have to be rooted out by a constant effort against corruption that requires you to have judges who have security, who have equipment, judges, prosecutors, witnesses, investigators, security, equipment, enough manpower so they're not just overwhelmed with caseloads.
And that's assuming that there are police there who are able and willing to make the arrests in the first place.
Right. Mexico has just, well, Mexico's police situation is far more complicated than Colombia's.
Mm-hmm.
Colombia has one single national police force, whereas Mexico, which is a federal system, has national, state level, municipal. There's more than 1,500 different police forces. They are on their way to creating a national preventive. I guess they're calling now just the federal police. It was the federal preventive police, which is supposed to be sort of the first force, the one they're going to really depend on as the sort of the elite units that are going to be taking down the cartels. And hopefully the answer does lie here. Hopefully they do have the controls necessary to make sure that this police unit doesn't get corrupted as past ones have. But they are, for instance, right now, as of April, the main force in the city of Juarez. The military has been largely pulled out of the front line, and I think that's actually positive.
Well, let me ask you the same question I asked Robert Bonner. What would you like your government to do?
I think that we're starting to move in the right direction, maybe this year rhetorically and hopefully soon with budget. The first 2 years of the so-called Merida Initiative, this is the framework for U.S. aid to Mexico, front-loaded military assistance. Most of the money went to these big-ticket items like helicopters, expensive Black Hawk helicopters, $15 million apiece, and surveillance aircraft for the Army and the Navy. The police, the judicial system, the customs and other law enforcement agencies kind of took a back seat as far as resources go. I think there's and sadly, as we found out in a report from our comptroller's office yesterday, only 9% of this big ticket aid has even been delivered so far. So you haven't even seen any real impact from the U.S. assistance other than training programs. There's talk now of moving more in the direction of helping Mexico build up its police, its judiciary, and other civilian institutions. And they're sort of tagging this change of direction Merida 2.0. And, the rhetoric is good. Let's hope it does translate into a more institutional approach with the Mexicans, and certainly dovetails with President Calderon's own changing rhetoric after the military offensive of the last 3 years failed to reduce violence.
Adam Isaacson, thanks again for joining us this morning. We do appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Adam Isaacson is the Senior Associate for Regional Security Policy at the Washington Office on Latin America. That's a think tank in Washington, D.C. Now we're going to bring a third perspective into this debate. George Grayson is the author of Mexico's Struggle with Drugs and Thugs, and he joins me now from Williamsburg, Virginia. Good morning.
Good morning.
And thank you for joining us as well.
My pleasure.
What do you think about this notion of applying Plan Colombia to Mexico?
It doesn't make any sense. It's not realistic for several reasons. First of all, the Colombian elite realized that they had a severe problem with regard to security and sovereignty, and therefore they backed the government's efforts to fight the cartels. Mexico's elite hasn't, that light bulb hasn't gone off yet, and many of them can live virtually cocooned in homes with state-of-the-art security devices, skilled chauffeurs, bodyguards, homes in the United States, and so forth. Secondly, Colombia had a national police, a functioning national police. It had to be reformed. Mexico has never had an honest, efficient, capable police force, because the country was ruled for 71 years by the PRI, the Institutional Revolutionary Party.
Mm-hmm.
And while there were police forces, they were at the service of the party to advance its political goals and were hugely corrupted. And finally, there is a toxic opposition in Mexico to U.S. troops entering their country. It's been difficult even to have FBI and DEA, Drug Enforcement Administration agents, armed there. So I think it's a night and day difference.
What about the actual war against the cartels itself? Are we seeing a replay of the Colombian War from the 80s and early 90s?
We're seeing a variant of it, but Mexico has two things that are different. It's got two absolutely bloodthirsty cartels who engage in beheadings. They dump people in vats of acid. They castrate, believe, spies, and then sew their testicles into their mouths. This is La Familia Michoacana, which is on the west coast and deals largely in methamphetamines. And then you've got Los Zetas, who are below Texas in Tamaulipas. And they're former Army Special Forces, and their level of brutality even exceeds those of the of La Familia. So you're dealing with a couple of groups here that are absolutely unscrupulous, bloodthirsty, and commit heinous acts that are reserved for the lowest precincts of hell.
Couldn't you say the same, though, about Pablo Escobar and his colleagues in the Medellin cartel?
Yes, they did start to indiscriminately kill civilians. And that we don't think that's happened yet in Mexico, although there was a car bomb during the past week.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be the tipping point from a war on drugs to terrorism. We just have to see how that plays out.
Do you see any hope in any of this?
I think we're creatures of the Enlightenment, and so we think tomorrow will be better than today, and for every problem there's a solution. I think the problem is focused in the U.S. We've got to do much more to curb demand, and eventually we've got to move toward decriminalization and legalization of at least marijuana. Prohibition simply didn't work in this country. It was, as Herbert Hoover said, a noble experiment. But when you've got a substance that people will pay large sums of money for, and you've got suppliers, those suppliers will follow the rules of the market,
mm-hmm.
and they will engage in violence, extreme violence against each other to get their slice of the market.
George Grayson, thanks again for joining us this morning.
My pleasure.
George Grayson, the author of Mexico's Struggle with Drugs and Thugs. He is in Williamsburg, Virginia.